strong. Thanks for listening to VOA1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, you will hear stories from John Russell and Katie Weaver. John's story discusses new work projects in the Midwestern U.S. state of Ohio and asks whether the state has enough people who can fill the open jobs. After that, you will hear from Katie Weaver, who looks at a new technique to fight misinformation developed by researchers at universities in Great Britain and Australia, along with a team at Google. Later, you will hear this week's Higher Education Report from Brian Lynn. He looks at how universities in the U.S. are helping Ukrainian students continue their studies while their country fights a war. At the end of today's program, Anna Mateo joins us for her weekly Words and Their Stories feature. You will learn about a phrase relating to farm animals. But first, here is my story about a new project in the northeastern U.S. state of Massachusetts, where Native Americans are working to restore a piece of land to how it was about 500 years ago. Asa Peters walked into a forest near Kingston, Massachusetts this summer and started cutting down a plant called Japanese knotweed. It's hard. You got to keep pulling and pulling. But it's cool, he said. It was difficult work in the hot August weather. Peters and other Native American volunteers were working to bring the land back to how it was before European settlers arrived in North America. That means taking away the kinds of trees and plants that were not believed to be there 500 years ago. He said, "The idea is to create a special place where we can do all kinds of great things." The Wampanoag Common Lands Project aims to turn the land back to how it was long ago, when members of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe used it for ceremonies. The land is next to a body of water called Muddy Pond. It is less than 10 kilometers from where settlers known as Pilgrims started the English colony of Plymouth about 400 years ago. Ramona Peters started a group called the Native Land Conservancy. She said the 13-hectare piece of land is where the first impact of colonization of this country happened. Beth Rose Middleton is a professor who studies Native American environmental policy and conservation at the University of California, Davis. She said the Wampanoag Common Lands Project is part of a movement to preserve and restore Native culture. She said the projects help fight climate change because many areas where Native Americans live have been depleted or used up. She said, taking care of the land in the way the Native American groups plan to might help it become resilient. Native American groups are having trouble living in the places where they have been for many years. Extremely dry weather in the American Southwest is causing problems for tribes there. In the wetlands of Louisiana, Native groups are worried about flooding from powerful storms. The group in Massachusetts hopes to copy a similar project in Northern California. In October of 2019, the Associated Press reported that the Wiat tribe has worked for 20 years to restore an island in Humboldt Bay that was polluted. Michelle Vassell is the administrator of the Wiat tribe. She called the work healing. She said that is because the island is where an attack on the native people by white settlers took place in 1860. The attack killed many people, and the tribe almost died out. Vassell said the attack was a scar on the community, and the work to bring the island back to health was a way to change that history. Like the Wiat tribe, the Wampanoag Common Lands Project hopes to make the pond and forest a better home for animals. Old buildings have been torn down. Sports areas have been cleared. Even large trees that are not native to Massachusetts have been taken out. New trees and plants were put in this summer. They include white oak trees, blueberry bushes, and witch hazel plants. Cameras have been set up to look for the return of animals like otters. If new buildings are put on the land, they will be traditional Wampanoag shelters made for guests or other community events. Asa Peters said he hopes to return one day to see how the plants he put in are doing. He also wants to find out how the people are using the land. My hope for it is to be a beautiful, comfortable space, Peters said. A place where people can come, and it helps fill them back up. I'm Dan Friedel.
The American state of Ohio's largest ever economic development project is expected to put workers in demand. The project will need 7,000 construction workers, but currently, experts say there is a national shortage of people working in the industry. The semiconductor manufacturer Intel announced the $20 billion project earlier this year. When its two factories open in 2025 near Columbus, they are expected to employ 3,000 people with an average pay of around $135,000. But first, the area must be developed and the semiconductor factories have to be built. Labor leaders and state officials say Central Ohio does not have 7,000 extra construction workers. Currently, projects in the area include a large Hilton Hotel in the capital, Columbus, and a $2 billion addition to the Ohio State University's Medical Center. Also, drug maker Amgen is planning to build a $365 million biomanufacturing plant not far from the Intel factory. Biomanufacturing uses biological systems to make medicines, food, and industrial products. To win the project, Ohio officials offered Intel support equal to about $2 billion, including 30 years of reduced taxes. Building is expected to go faster after Congress approved a spending law last month that aims to help the semiconductor industry and increase scientific research in the United States. The law gives more than $52 billion in support to the semiconductor industry. It also provides a 25% tax credit for companies that invest in computer processor plants in the U.S. One of Intel's top reasons for choosing Ohio is access to the region's robust workforce, the company said. It will not be without its challenges, but we are confident there is enough demand that these jobs will be filled. Federal government information says there are about 45,000 construction workers in central Ohio. That number increased by 1,800 from May 2021 to May 2022, which suggests a shortage given current and future demands. I don't know of a single commercial construction company that's not hiring, said Mary Tebow. Tebow is with the Builders Exchange of Central Ohio, a construction industry trade group. Including overtime, pay for skilled tradespeople could hit $125,000 each year, said Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Building Trades Council. John Husted is Ohio's lieutenant governor. He said the Intel project is so big it will involve people who did not consider construction jobs before. When you're willing to pay people more to do something, you will find the talent, he said. Talent is a word to describe skills, or people who have skills. Some workers in the home construction industry will likely move to the building construction jobs. The change will likely reduce the limited supply of home builders, said Ed Brady of the Home Builders Institute, a trade group. Ed Dietz of the National Association of Home Builders explained that reductions in the number of home builders risk a housing shortage. He said a shortage could slow the economic development that Intel is trying to create. Dietz asked, "How do you attract those business investments if you can't also provide additional housing available for the growth in the labor force?" The population of Central Ohio is expected to reach 3 million by 2050. That rate would require 11,000 to 14,000 houses built each year. That estimate came before Intel's project was announced, said Jennifer Knoll. She is with the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. In 2020, the region was able to build only 11,000 homes. We know we've got some work to do as a region, Knoll said. I'm John Russell.
International researchers and experts at Google are working on a way to prevent false information about Ukrainian refugees from spreading in Eastern Europe. They call their effort pre-bunking. The term comes from the word debunking, which means to show that an idea is untrue. Pre means before. In other words, the researchers aim to prevent misinformation from spreading in the first place. The idea of pre-bunking is to educate social media users so they can decide on their own if videos, website headlines, and social media posts are false. The researchers started thinking about pre-bunking earlier this year, after thousands of people began fleeing Ukraine following Russia's invasion. The refugees went to places like Poland, the Czech Republic, and Slovakia. As refugees arrived in these countries, false claims came with them. Many people saw social media posts about Ukrainians taking jobs, carrying out crimes, and taking support from aid organizations, even if they did not need it. There were even stories about Ukrainian refugees painting their national colors of blue and yellow on Polish statues. News reports later suggested the vandalism may have been done by pro-Russian groups, hoping to create tension between Ukraine and Poland. In the past, it has been difficult to prevent this kind of false information from spreading. But the researchers say pre-bunking can help teach people to recognize misinformation. This, in turn, stops the wrong information from spreading. The researchers involved in the effort are from Cambridge and Bristol universities in Britain, as well as the University of Western Australia. Their work appeared recently in the publication Science Advances. In the report, the researchers explain that short online videos that teach critical thinking skills can help people understand when they are being targeted with misinformation. The videos explain the common parts of a misinformation campaign. The researchers say the parts are emotional language, personal attacks, and false comparisons between two unrelated things. People who looked at the examples in the videos improved their ability to tell the difference between true and false information. Google was also part of the study. The division that assisted in the study is called Jigsaw. Beth Goldberg is the head of research there. She said, "We spent quite a bit of time and energy studying the problem." The goal, she said, was to make internet users more resilient to misinformation. The researchers are now working to see if the same users can be helped by seeing so-called booster videos. Booster videos are additional videos that could add to what the viewers have already learned. Google will work to show the videos on popular social media sites like YouTube, TikTok, and Facebook in the European countries of Poland, the Czech Republic, and Slovakia. The leader of Google's Jigsaw group is Yasmin Green. She said the pre-bunking effort is supposed to work alongside Google's other efforts to prevent the spread of false information. She said her group wants to be sure people are safe and informed online. The researchers looked at traditional efforts to fight against misinformation. They noted that they are not always effective. For example, they said the process of fact-checking by reporters can be helpful, but it takes a long time. In addition, the process known as content moderation, which is done by social media companies, can be uneven. They noted that Facebook and Twitter are often criticized for not doing enough to remove material that is false or in violation of their rules. Instead, the researchers think it is a better idea to give people the tools to look at the material and decide for themselves whether it is false. That helps people judge a wide amount of information. I'm Katie Weaver.
Ukrainian students seeking to attend college in the United States are receiving assistance from many American schools. A recent report covering 559 schools found that at least 120 universities are offering some kind of assistance to Ukrainian students. The nonprofit Institute of International Education, IIE, prepared the report. The assistance includes extra time to complete applications and eased requirements to provide some official documents. U.S. colleges have also expanded financial aid and increased the number of positions for Ukrainian students. The University of Chicago launched a $20 million program that includes tuition for Ukrainian students. Texas A&M is also providing assistance for tuition and living costs. Hampton University in Virginia invited up to 100 students affected by the war to study for free during the summer. As the war in Ukraine enters its sixth month, some students are now arriving at U.S. colleges to begin the school year. Jason says, co-president at IIE, called U.S. higher education a safe haven for international students. The Ukrainian students had to overcome many barriers to reach America. The U.S. Embassy in Kyiv is not issuing student visas. Students were forced to visit diplomatic offices elsewhere. Making such a trip is especially difficult for men, who must prove they are students to avoid serving in the military. 18-year-old Alexander Sinhaevsky is one example. The young man will attend Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. this fall. He ended up traveling to Romania to get a visa, and Georgetown paid for his hotel stay. Sinhaevsky told Reuters news agency he had planned to study business at Georgetown, but after experiencing the destruction in his country, he decided to study international relations and become a politician in Ukraine. I did not change the direction with my own compass, Sinhaevsky said. Instead, he said the events happening in his country had pointed him in another direction. Another student, Gleb Burtsev, imagined himself filming his reaction to the application decisions from U.S. universities. But when those decisions came, the 18-year-old was often sitting in a windowless room or bomb shelter in Kyiv. About a month after Russia invaded Ukraine, Burtsev was accepted into Rhode Island's Brown University for this fall. The school also invited him to attend school for the summer and paid for his food, flights, and housing. I didn't expect such support from a university somewhere very far away, Burtsev said. Everything is very exciting, new people, new opportunities. Once in the United States, many Ukrainian students are conflicted, feeling both gratitude and guilt. They worry about family members at home. Many decide to explore educational paths that will help them rebuild their country. Every single Ukrainian student who I've spoken to wants to go back, said Yale University professor Arne Westad, an expert in Russian history. and they really want to go back as quickly as possible. He added, most of the schools are offering similar help to Russian students. They recognize the students cannot influence government policy in Ukraine and are also experiencing the war's harmful effects. I'm Brian Lynn.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Many of our English expressions come from our interactions with or observations of animals. Today we talk about an animal that gets blamed for a lot of bad things, a goat. To be more exact, we are talking about a scapegoat. A scapegoat is a person who is the receiver of blame and anger about a situation. Often the anger is without reason. So if someone is unfairly blamed for something, that person could be called a scapegoat. Scapegoat combines the English words escape and goat. The word has an interesting history. But before we hear that, let's hear the word used in some examples.
Just because Tabitha had made mistakes in the past, she became the scapegoat in her family for everything that went wrong. But in fact, her sisters did worse things than she did. The builder of a new apartment building became the scapegoat for changes to the neighborhood. Houses became more expensive and poorer people began moving out. But in reality, wealthy people had been moving into the area for many years.
Now, let's talk about the origin. Where does this word come from? Experts with Merriam-Webster say scapegoat is connected to religion. On the dictionary's website, they explain that on a certain religious holiday, ancient Hebrews would sacrifice one goat and lead another one into the wilderness. The goat sent to the wilderness carried all the sins of the people. So, historically speaking, a scapegoat is an actual goat that takes on the sins of others. In other words, the goat carried the sins of other people away with it. In our modern usage, a scapegoat is someone who bears the blame for others. In English, there is another word that has a similar meaning. A fall guy is someone who is blamed for something that someone else did. The word fall guy suggests that the person was set up for something they did not do. Here's an example.
Lawyers for the defendant argued that their client was being set up by her boss. She was simply a fall guy for her boss's crimes. He was the real guilty party.
And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Thank you, Anna. And that's the Learning English broadcast for today. Thanks to my colleagues John Russell, Katie Weaver, Brian Lynn, and Anna Mateo. And thank you for listening. Be sure to join us again tomorrow to keep learning English with stories from around the world. Visit the Learning English website for more. You can find us at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Dan Friedel.